Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hashrate Podcast. We appreciate you guys listening to the show. This episode is with Wes Fulford, the CEO of Bitfarms. And, you know, we are moving away from the interview format. However, when I had the opportunity to sit down with Wes, I didn't want to pass that up because Wes is leading one of the largest cryptocurrency mining operations in North America. And it was a rare opportunity to be able to sit down with someone in that position and ask them questions about how they have scaled thus far, what their plans look like for the future, how they're viewing hardware, how they're looking at their OpEx and their power costs and all of the factors around building and scaling a cryptocurrency mining business. And, you know, obviously being in a leadership role within a cryptocurrency mining business, I found it an invaluable opportunity that I certainly didn't want to pass up. So despite us moving to more of a loose conversational format as the Hashrate Podcast, this is really just a conversation with Wes and I, with me asking him some very direct questions about their operations at Bitfarms, how they've scaled from one facility to now five, and how they are planning and looking at not only the halving, but the events that will lead them as they move into the next 96 plus megawatts of cryptocurrency mining equipment that they're going to be scaling into. So if you guys do enjoy the show, as always, we'd appreciate if you leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. Let us know what you think. We read those comments, we take them to heart, and we truly appreciate you guys for continuing to tune into the show. But without further ado, here we go. Conversation with Wes Fulford and I. Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Podcast. I'm the Bitcoin Broski. My guest today is a former investment banker with over a decade of experience leading hundreds of financings, mergers, and acquisitions prior to becoming the Chief Executive Officer and Director of Bitfarms. As the CEO, he's led the rapidly growing blockchain infrastructure company as they scale one of the largest cryptocurrency mining operations in North America. Welcome to the show, Wes Fulford. Welcome, Wes.
Hi, Whit. Thank you.
It's good to have you on the show. There may be some people who are listening who know who you are, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we can kind of dive into it as we go along. I mean, my background, you know, out of school and a business degree was to start asset management, which sort of led me down the path of investment banking after a few years. And I spent about a dozen years in the sector, based out of Toronto, primarily working with, you know, U.S. and Canadian investment banks, and sort of got involved in the crypto space, covering a burgeoning sector here in Canada. In early 2016, started buying Bitcoin back then, you know, unfortunately not at 10 bucks a coin, but hundreds of dollars a coin. And,
right.
And, you know, was involved in funding some other crypto mining businesses and met the Bitfarms team in my biz dev efforts and decided to throw my hat in the ring as a public company CEO.
That's awesome. So how was that transition moving from the financial markets into crypto in a full-time capacity like that?
I mean, it's a new industry and, you know, I think everybody is sort of figuring it out as they go. We have the benefit of being at it for, you know, certainly quite a bit longer than many of our peers. And then this industry, quite a bit longer, means a couple of years longer. It's not, you know, it's still in its infancy, but we are a public listed company and, you know, that'll govern sort of some of the comments that I can make today. The transition, it wasn't a tough one, a difficult one. I think as an investment banker, you know, advising management teams and board of directors on executing business plans, you know, strategic planning, decision-making, governance, capital raise, merger acquisition opportunities, execution. It's sort of, you know, a lot of what I'm doing as CEO and of Bitfarms. So it's a good training ground, I think, for any public company CEO to have a background in what I was doing as a banker.
Coming into a mining business, which is, you know, a niche within crypto that is highly technical, how's the learning curve been?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty attractive business and really does sort of suit my personality and skill set. It's an infrastructure play at the end of the day, right? We're the bank.
Absolutely.
In the cryptocurrency world, you know, relying on anybody trading, buying, selling, whether it's wallet to wallet or through an exchange, cryptocurrency is relying upon a miner to process and, you know, validate and verify those transactions. So I like the sector given the fact that it's an essential service. It's a must have. And in terms of, you know, looking at reinvesting in our business and growing, executing our pipeline of contracted power, you know, we really do a deep dive and place a lot of emphasis on the actual fundamental economics behind our business. You know, simple financial market or capital market principles being, you know, return on invested capital and payback periods and that sort of thing. And the wonderful thing about this business is the fact that, you know, your revenue stream really is formulaic. There's four inputs to how much you're going to earn on a unit of computing power, you know, a terahash of computing power daily, which is the block reward, some, you know, some transaction fees, Bitcoin price difficulty, and essentially how many terahash or petahash you're running. Most of those don't fluctuate day to day outside of BTC price. So when we look at how many petahash we're running, and we're very transparent in how many megawatts we're consuming and the price that we're paying for our power, all of which we disclose, it's great as an investor and as a management team. We can, you know, have a lot of transparency and comfort around how quickly we could return a capital investment, and you know, as long as we understand the sort of fundamental drivers behind BTC price and difficulty.
But we talk about that internally all the time. There's so many fewer things that you have to consider when building a mining operation as opposed to a traditional business. To me, it almost seems like the easiest model to build. It's just locking down the initial capital to get built what you want to build.
Yeah, there's customer. It starts with customer acquisition costs, but you know, you don't need a an administration team, a customer service team, a sales force. Like, this is a wonderful business as long as you have the ability to scale quickly. And, you know, the bottleneck historically has been attractively priced or competitively priced power and at scale as a starting point. But at Bitfarms, we've taken steps to vertically integrate at every step of the way to try and squeeze margin where some of our peers can't, in terms of our power usage efficiency, how we're using the power, and that achieved through professional engineered facilities and design, our hardware uptime, which is facilitated by an in-house performance and monitoring software, and a repair lab that we've constructed to, you know, identify underperforming hardware, get it repaired and racked quickly. And three, our build-out costs, which I believe certainly the public markets are industry leading, given the fact that we've purchased a electrical contractor. So we have 30 electricians on staff that we pay hourly. We're also able to negotiate good pricing on all the electrical components in our build out through ownership of an electrical contractor. So it starts with power, but there's so much more you can do as you build and improve your organization and have the economies of scale that come with that.
Now, when you joined Bitfarms, how many facilities were there? I know there's five now, but where were they when you joined the team?
They were at three, and, you know, sub 200 petahash of computing power within 3 or 4 months of me taking over as CEO. We completed the build out of our fourth facility in Magog, which is a 10 megawatt asset, a sort of interesting design, a blend of our new build outs and old build outs. So there's pictures on our website. This is a very big year for us, the biggest in the history of our company, which was the addition of a fifth facility in Sherbrooke. You know, initially the first two phases is a 30 megawatt project. It's running all new generation hardware. We started plugging in that hardware at scale in bulk in September and just completed it recently. The build-out we actually started in, call it May of this year.
And you guys have, I think, 95 megawatts planned as far as the expansion for the future. Is that right?
Yeah, we have 56.8 running right now. We have actual infrastructure we've built being 64 megawatts to date. So we have a little bit of room, a little bit of rack space left in some of the existing operations. But behind that, we have 95.5 megawatts of contracted power within Quebec. We're already the province's largest miner. The goal would be to continue to execute on that contracted power pipeline and scale the business going forward.
Awesome. And when it comes to Quebec, I mean, we've heard, you know, Bitmain's tried to establish a farm there and that didn't necessarily work out. There's obviously a lot of draw to Quebec because of the cheap hydro. It doesn't seem like you're interested or looking at expanding anywhere outside of there, at least not in the near future. So why do you find it, you know, such favorable conditions to continue to work and build in Quebec?
It's Quebec is where two of our founders are based and have been building businesses for 20 years. It's a great place to operate as a crypto miner. One, because, you know, first and foremost, the power is competitively priced on a global scale. Two, it's hydroelectric energy in a industry with a lot of social economic oversight or concern. The fact that we're using a renewable energy source is important to us and our branding.
Sure.
That energy source is actually hydro, and when you think about hydropower, those the rivers running the turbines, the hydro dams in the province don't freeze. So those hydro dams, the turbines turn 24 hours a day at the same rate virtually all year round. So the grid itself is very, very stable. We don't have a lot of downtime or outages, network or grid related issues. So it's a great place to operate or to operate from that context. And then you layer on the fact that it's cold and cool and clean air. And
cold's the right word.
And relatively, you know, humidity free for 11 and a half months a year. It's a great place to operate. Politically, there's been some noise, given the overwhelming demand for power that the province did have at one point. I think a lot of that has fallen away. But given Hydro-Québec, or you may or may not know this, but Hydro-Québec is the monopoly power producer within the province. They have the vast majority of virtually all of the energy production within the province. There is a political appointed board that sits over top of them called the Régie d'Énergie, which sort of governs what they can and can't do with contract awards and pricing. And we're paying an LG rate, which is the same industrial rate that every consumer in the province is paying, that is drawing 5 megawatts or more at the sites they operate.
Sure. So when there's a monopoly like that in place, you know, what's to stop them from kind of doing the same thing that happened in Wenatchee, Washington, which I'm sure you may be familiar with? They just, you know, arbitrarily started raising rates on the miners that were there. Is there any concern for that in Québec?
There has been a process that has caught the attention of some of the media regarding how to, you know, price new contract awards in this sector. We have the benefit of while we actually worked with Hydro-Québec, the power producer, early days to identify the sites that we built out initially and where we're operating today. They have been a supportive partner of ours historically, and we do collaborate with them. But that politically appointed board, the Régie d'Énergie, that sits over top Hydro-Québec, is meant to just prevent exactly what's happened in Washington State. It's a highly regulated and governed industry, and you know we're paying the same rate as every industrial consumer within the province. To right now, as the regime currently works, we would have to, if they wanted to raise our rates, they'd have to raise their rates for every industrial consumer. So we've been an active participant in the process that has been unfolding to evaluate this business in particular, on a go-forward basis. And, you know, we feel that given the fact we've been operating as long as we have and all of our power was signed prior to any of this starting, we're comfortable that Québec remains a great place for us to continue to build our business.
So, you know, shifting gears a bit, right now we are nearing the halving. From a business standpoint, how are you guys preparing for that event? And what do you anticipate comes from or just shortly after the Bitcoin halving?
From an operational standpoint, first and foremost, make sure you're using reasonably priced and competitively priced power on a global scale. To make sure that power you're drawing, as much of it as possible, is going into hashing. This is that power usage efficiency ratio we talk about. And you can achieve high PUEs through professionally engineered design. You know, we rely on airflow to cool our facilities. All the air passing through our mining racks is going through the fans and across the boards, and none of it around or over. And that allows us to have zero reliance on HVAC across all of our 5 facilities. So just having the operational know-how to make sure you're competing on a low-cost basis. But at the end of the day, I think it's going to come down to simple economics. And that's the wonderful and elegant thing about the Bitcoin protocol, is the fact that there's this built-in governor, like a governor on a golf cart, that is regulating the production or mining rewards to for per block, which is a formulaic and timed and predictable daily event that if the economic conditions don't warrant the electrical spend, all of the marginal and higher cost miners are simply going to unplug. So we're a strong believer that, you know, going into the halving and heading out of the halving, mining economics will adjust, or sorry, will be relatively consistent, and that's going to happen in the form of two possibilities: either BTC doubles, or all the marginal higher cost guys unplug because they can't mine profitably. And given the fact that you can, on a daily basis, if you're a pool participant, you can calculate your rewards and make, you know, and determine whether or not they're sufficient enough to justify the price of your electrical spend. So I think the adjustment's going to be very quick on the other side of the halving event, ultimately depending on sort of where we're at in the, well, I digress. It's going to be very quick. Whether it's going to be a true 50% drop in hash rates if there isn't a doubling of BTC prices to be determined, but it's going to be something close to that.
I would think that there would have to be some kind of pullback on the hash rate considering its continued increase over the last 12 months now. Going to the halving, I think it is a big variable. Your guys' cost of production is low compared to a lot of others that I've seen. So, you know, it's good to know. I always like to peek behind the curtains and get a sense of, you know, what's going on in a big facility, because there are a lot of people that right now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me that if you're a big facility and your cost of production is around $6,000 per Bitcoin, to me, that seems nuts. There's a ton of cheap power out there. And nowadays, it seems like there's so many different institutions and businesses catering to those that would like to start a mining facility. It's becoming easier than it ever has been to raise the funds to build something like this. But, you know, with your experience, one thing that I'd love to ask, there's been a lot of talk in social media over the past 3 or 4 months about debt as means of raising funds for mining operations or the continued growth of mining operations. Now that, you know, crypto companies are becoming more bankable, have you noticed in Canada that debt is more readily available?
I'll back up to your last question. What I should have pointed out is, you know, making sure you're running the most efficient miners is going to be paramount as well, right? Moving to 40 and 45 joule miners when power cost is your biggest spend, you know, in order to survive the halving, even as an industrial scale miner, you've got to be running, you know, new generation equipment. Going forward to your new question on the debt side, we funded our business with a credit facility. We executed, well, about a year ago, December 14th, I think last year, we signed a term sheet in like a $3,600 or $3,700 price environment, watching BTC implode from 6,600 at the end of October and a short 6 weeks later to 3,500, 3,600 in 2018. We signed a credit facility based on, you know, the merits of our business and our low cost structure at a time when we actually had a public listing in Israel. I won't get into that at this point, but
okay.
You know, our equity price certainly wasn't something I'd be comfortable raising a bunch of capital at, given the dilution that you'd be incurring for your shareholders. So we looked at a debt funding and ran a process internally with sort of my investment banking experience to identify some lenders, and the list was quite small even a year ago. Had multiple term sheet submissions and selected the lender that has helped us grow to the level we're at today throughout 2019. It was great for us because even at a 10% interest rate, which is what we're paying, and that's publicly disclosed, it's a very, you know, solid source of capital for us where we didn't have to go out and dilute our shareholders significantly. And given the returns on investment, dollars invested, that we're able to generate 10% return is not meaningful at the end of the day. So lots of flexibility in covenants and the way we drew it down, but it was tied to a few milestones on the Canadian listing front. In Canada, I think there's only one other publicly traded cryptocurrency company that has a credit facility, which they actually just refinanced, and it's a similar size to ours. There are some groups that are doing crypto-backed loans, but Doesn't suit our business model because we're actually selling our production every 1 or 2 days. We've always maintained that policy to sort of lock in our mining margins and reinvest in our growth organically. Mm-hmm. But it's a marketplace that is developing, but as with our industry broadly in general, I think it's still in its infancy. Equity markets have been somewhat decimated, so I think more and more our peers are moving to sort of creative funding structures.
As the space gets more legitimized, every business will start to operate more like traditional businesses, or as we view them, traditional businesses. I'm excited for when, you know, all crypto businesses are also lumped into that traditional business category.
For sure.
We're not too far away. It's just going to take a little bit of time, but we're still early. You know, one thing I wanted to touch on, you'd mentioned having the best equipment. I think in one of your new facilities I read, you guys went with the Avalon A10s. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason that you steered away from, because I know the hype it seemed like over the past 6 months was around the Whatz miners. Is there a reason that you went with Canaan and Avalon's over Whatz miner and MyBT?
We actually have a number of Whatz miner M20Ss. We have some M21s as well. We bought a mix of InnoSilicon, Canaan, and Whatz miner for our newest facility, the 30 megawatts at Sherbrooke.
Okay.
The reason why we selected all three was basically a blend of deposit structures and ultimately price per terahash, and obviously delivery schedules as well. The Whatz miner product, the reason why it wasn't our first batch or first installation at this build-out was, you know, early in the year, I guess you could still say they were also relatively new. I mean, the leading engineering physicist from Bitmain is the CEO of MicroBT.
Yep.
And you know, they hadn't done huge production runs. They didn't have a big balance sheet, so they were asking for some pretty heavy deposit payments, you know, 80 to 100% on day one without even seeing a miner.
Sure.
So we chose to go with Inno and Canaan first and second, given a little bit stronger balance sheets and more flexibility in the deposit payments and better delivery schedules initially. But we did plug in 2,250 Whatz miner M20Ss over the last month here in November.
Okay, not a small amount. We've had the pleasure of working with, not Inno, but initial talks with Canaan and some with Whatz miner, and the teams have been great to work with. But I can totally understand from your point of view and from the scale at which you guys are operating, having that proven track record is critically important, you know, especially if you're going to lay out all the capital that's necessary to buy 2,200 Whatz miners.
Yeah, and it's a great unit. I mean, it's really dense, which is a great thing. There is obviously sort of an infrastructure component or flexibility that plays into the type of hardware you're able to run, what sort of capacity all of your PDUs have, and whether or not they can, I mean, if you're building facilities for an S9 miner with PDUs and all of a sudden you're trying to run a 18 amp, 3,300 watt Whatz miner M20S, it's, you know, sometimes it can really wreak havoc on shelf space, rack space, network connections, PDUs. So it's very hard to have the foresight to anticipate minor design changes and the evolution in new generation hardware as you construct facilities. But the wonderful thing about the M20S, the new Whatz miner product, and the M30S, which they'll be coming out with early next year, mm-hmm. is it is quite dense and low airflow. So less heat removal exhaust turbines, less rack space, more hash power per square foot. So it is a great miner.
Absolutely. You said that your operation is entirely airflow, so you guys aren't incredibly concerned with HVAC. Are you guys operating on like a chicken coop design? You know, that's something that we've seen perpetuated a little bit more, but still, I mean, it's more of a traditional data center build. Is that the same kind of layout that you guys use?
I think if you were building facilities like the actual bricks and mortar from scratch, the chicken coop design is quite efficient, right? High ceiling, one rack of miners, one wall of miners down the center of the facility, isolating or one half from the other, hot and the cool side of your mining rack. It makes sense that they're relatively cheap to build. Our five facilities to date have been retrofitting vacant industrial scale real estate in rural Quebec in the southeast. So we lease four of our five properties, the largest facility we have, we own, which is in Sherbrooke. But there's lots of vacant real estate and ample power available, and the price of that real estate is very inexpensive. We're trying to be a good corporate citizen within the communities we operate in, and part of that is being able to repurpose vacant warehouses that have been sitting idle for years and years.
I mean, I'm sure that's welcomed by the community, you know,
for sure.
Positive impact that crypto is making. You know, Wes, as you guys are continuing to scale, where do you guys see the landscape of Bitcoin going in the next handful of years?
I think there's going to be more and more margin compression for sure. So you really do have to focus on having scale to offset the fixed costs in a business, especially as a public company, but constantly making sure you're running sort of the best of the best hardware and maximizing how you're using the power and being plugged into a jurisdiction that can compete globally on a price per kilowatt basis are going to be paramount. But right now we're sitting at about four. I haven't looked at BTC price in the last couple hours, but I'm assuming it's around 7,300 to 7,500, which means we're sitting at around 14.5 cents revenue per terahash. In Q1 this year, we saw a quarterly average of around 16.2 cents revenue per terahash. So that at the time was the peak of the crypto winter. We're now sitting lower than that, which suggests that, you know, a big component of the network is now new generation hardware, which is able to mine on a lower cost basis. But we constantly evaluate mining economics, and that is 100% focused on revenue per terahash and our cost per terahash on a power only basis, how much it costs us to produce one terahash of computing power based on the efficiency of the fleet we're running, and two, on a sort of fully loaded basis, including all of our operational overhead, rents, insurance, labor, etc. Right now, I think what you're seeing in mining economics, it's quite similar to where we were at in Q1 2019 and Q4 2018, where you're seeing a swing in BTC prices, you know, in the $300 or $400 range, met with a highly correlated change in difficulty on that 2016 block, or after the 2016 block, where the market is starting to reflect a little bit of an equilibrium, and that's what we were seeing in Q4 last year and Q1 this year. Where the marginal guy is falling off and they're unplugging daily, if not hourly, based on BTC pricing, depending on whether or not they're selling. But I think going forward, there will be wonderful times of outsized returns where BTC pricing outpaces network hash rate growth, and anybody running at scale prior to that event is going to realize very strong returns in their capital investments, but that will quickly normalize back down to where we're sitting today and possibly even a little bit lower based on higher efficiency equipment being run. So again, making sure your hardware is the best of the best and your good operators is going to be important to compete long term.
Okay, so I've got to ask, I know you guys are primarily focused on Bitcoin, but you do have, or at least according to the website, some miners that are on Litecoin. Recently, there's been a pretty nasty downturn in Litecoin's price. Are you going to operate your L3s? Are you looking to continue mining Litecoin long term, or is this something that you're going to slowly phase out of?
We had about 2,900 L3s running in April of this year. 2,500 of those were acquired in March at sort of equipment rock bottom, or sort of basement rock bottom pricing.
Okay.
In a market where BTC or LTC hadn't started to run, we did very well mining a couple of months, three months with that equipment, paid it off multiple times, and then turned around and sold it. So we do not have any more Litecoin on the shelves, no more L3s. We did earlier this year I think it was, it's either Q2 or Q3 webcast, we announced that we're now 100% ASIC BTC mining.
You guys are officially maximalists now, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's been our business plan from day one. I mean, I guess it originated as two of our founders were involved in a small GPU facility, but very quickly pivoted to BTC.
Damn. Yeah, we're, you know, obviously Hashrate's a GPU mining company at heart. You know, we mm-hmm. built our operating system for GPU miners, but, you know, we're obviously scaling now to serve ASIC miners because, and we see it. We see the way that the trend is going. You know, there's Bitcoin and then there's Bitcoin. So we want to make sure that we're able to support the miners that are actually going to be profitable. There are obviously opportunities for GPU miners still, we believe, but it takes a very high level of aptitude and you've got to be incredibly active in not only monitoring and switching where your machines are working, but you also have to be knowledgeable of timing of when you're going to release those coins. So, you know, as you guys are mining now and you're selling every, you know, day or two, operating like a normal business would operate, it's very hard to do that when you're GPU mining, right? Because you may spec mine for a couple of weeks trying to load up on coins while no one else is paying attention. And then you've got to focus on getting them to the market at the right time and dumping them when the profit is there. And if you miss that, you're stuck holding the big old bag of nothing. So it's an interesting dynamic. Over the past couple of years, how things have shifted. And I can only imagine that the next couple of years are going to be even more of the same, you know, especially as high performance computing becomes more of a focus for a lot of the big GPU farms, which we've started to see. Like there's some big players in the States and abroad that are, you know, GPU farms, but now they're converting a lot of their focus to rendering or AI ML. And that's probably going to be the play long term for a lot of those facilities that already are sitting on, you know, millions of dollars worth of GPUs.
For sure. So we went through, when we moved or migrated or repatriated the listing back to Canada, which we, you know, started trading on the TSXV on July 16th. We did that with a long form prospectus, which we cleared with the Ontario Securities Commission, which is a big milestone for our company because we were the first in Canada to ever achieve that in the crypto sector, that approval or blessing from the principal regulator. Part of, I think, them getting comfortable blessing our listing was the fact that we didn't have big inventory concerns. And, you know, we filed our prospectus and had a review underway with the regulator in the midst of the Quadrigo fiasco, like in, I think it was May of this year, which was mm-hmm. the absolute worst timing possible. But to have something like that happen, but the fact that we didn't have those custody concerns was a blessing at the end of the day. So, you know, mining GPU, mining a variety of altcoins and inventorying and having a trading team trying to successfully monetize your production at the right time is not something that would fly with the regulators here in Canada. Well, certainly our business model, not to say our peers couldn't do that, but and the fact that we are audited by Ernst & Young was also important to them, accepting us as an audit client. The fact that, again, we don't have any custody issues, we monetize our production on a regular basis. So, but, you know, you can, as a smaller scale guy that has the time to really pay attention to some of the other attractive GPU-based mining opportunities, it could be quite lucrative, certainly, but you definitely have to devote a lot of time and attention to it.
Absolutely, yeah. And as you've already said, I mean, at scale, that's a huge burden. For operating a business, then ultimately, for now at least, fiat to the bottom line is critical, especially in a position like yours where you're beholden to shareholders. I imagine it alleviates a lot of the risk and the burden and the stress of how that would be to operate a business in those circumstances. You know, not that there's anything wrong with hodling, but it's not the appropriate course of action for everyone.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly if we had the ability or the hardware flexibility to migrate our hash power to sort of any altcoin we wanted, again, we have almost 60 megawatts of infrastructure running, hardware running. So there'd be probably less than 10 coins we could mine on any given day where we wouldn't be a significant network influence, you know, moving our hash power over to take advantage of an opportunity. So it just, it doesn't really work at scale.
Sure. Well, Wes, as we wrap things up here, what I'd love is just, you know, there's a lot of people that are listening that would probably dream of operating at a scale that you're operating. When it comes to the people who are, you know, smaller miners wanting to grow, maybe they've got, you know, a 5 megawatt facility and they want to start scaling up. What's some advice that you could give them to help them stay the course and also prepare for growth?
That's a tough question. I get a lot of questions daily, and I've never been asked this. I guess the most important component of reinvesting and scaling your business is to make sure that you're spending the capital smartly. Mining economics and hardware pricing tied to those economics is going to fluctuate rapidly, but long term, If you look at this business and you truly understand rev per terahash and sort of mining costs on a global scale, things will normalize. So I would just say, ignore the hype. Don't get caught chasing. Invest prudently and for the long term, and focus on your operations after you've made that investment.
That's awesome, man. I think that's a great place to wrap things up. Wes, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and chat with me tonight. And I'm excited to see where BitFarms goes here in the next 12 to 18 months.
Me as well. It's going to be a fun 2020. And like all other miners, we're hoping it's just as a big year as we've had in 2019. So can't wait and certainly appreciate the time to speak to you today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Sounds great.